You are the new Leadership Development Minister for Social Justice and Mission?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. That's a mouthful. I always have to stop and think about that. But Social Justice and Mission.
And Mission. Mm-hmm.
And you've been engaged in that service for a couple of weeks?
Yep, since October 28th.
All right.
So I don't know where that puts us.
And?
And
so how is it so far?
Oh, it's spectacular. Yeah, first week was a lot of protocol and passwords and equipment.
Okay.
This week I've actually gotten a chance to reach out to some folks and have some conversations, and that's just been amazing. So.
Yeah. Now, this is an area of interest that you've had for a long time.
Well, I was just sharing with Phil that I've been sitting on my couch for about 2 years, and what I mean by that is I've been in a process of active discernment. Where's the next step in my life? Where am I supposed to be putting my gifts and skills to use? And what I will say is that this seems to have found me, rather than that I've been actively pursuing it. People have been inviting me to participate in learning more about social justice, and I just seem to be finding more and more opportunities, and so this was just another one that I was approached, and it lined up with the direction that I've been learning and leaning. So that's been good. My lifelong passion's been music. So
well, this is a little different then.
Yes, and I think as a human being, justice has been a big issue for me all along, and the church just kind of seems to be.
Say a little bit more about that.
Well, I've always been a strong feminist, and that just comes from my family background and whatnot. And I've just really always been a strong feminist all the way through school and various sundry things. And as I was thinking about who I am as a person, I can clearly remember standing up for people that I didn't even really necessarily like, because they were being treated in a way that wasn't right in terms of. You know, they weren't being treated equally, or people were, well, even physical harm. I don't know what that is, but I heard it described recently about there's things that make our heart break and there's things that make our fist clench, and I tend to be a fist clencher.
Okay.
And what I'll say then is that my relationship with the church has just kind of started to really kind of help me find a better outlet for that in the sense of, how would Christ have me do this? In a sense of why would Christ have me do this? In a sense of who are the people that are being whose voices aren't being heard, and then also how can I give away the power that I've been given for the good of other people? So I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Sure. In a way, then, is this a transition from being a doer to a supporter and encourager of people doing out of who they are?
Absolutely. I think that I would still put myself between a person, you know, if there were a bullying situation, I know. I'm much more comfortable putting myself. I'd much rather have the bully hit me than someone else.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. And I've been dealing, you know, I've been thinking about that. But one of the things that that really turns my crank, I'm a teacher. I've always been a teacher, which is even more important than me doing it, is you figure out how to do it for yourself.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it isn't just I have to stand between you and the bully, but how do you become a person who can speak up for yourself, or you know, so that you can reach the goals or situation you want to stand in, if that makes any kind of sense. So,
sure.
So I think I wrote in my first original thing something about bringing out people's voices. Again, as a teacher, I can sing all the opera arias, and I enjoy doing that, but I have a lot more fun getting someone else to sing those opera arias as well.
Yeah.
So
how do you see this happening as the Leadership Development Minister for Social Justice and Mission?
Yeah, I'm practicing this technique called listening. So I'm a talker. The way I see it playing out at this point is, again, listening deeply. So making sure I'm going where people aren't perhaps being heard because they're too small or they're not connected in some way, and trying to pull from them, what is justice to you? Why are you doing it? Why aren't you doing it? Where's God in the midst of all of that?
Mm-hmm.
My thought on that, at least, is partially that by being heard, it helps people to see them, to be themselves. Like, so being heard is good. So to make sure that they feel heard, but then also to bring that back and say, this is where we're strong in the conference, and this is where we're weak in the conference. Here's a group of people that are ready to go, but there's only 10 of them, and they really don't have the resources. So how can we, as the conference, help to connect them to a larger group of people to do those kinds of things? I also believe that there's some division, at least culturally, and I think in the local churches, about justice issues in the church. Some idea that that isn't a place for the church to be doing work, and some pushback against that side of you know, the social side of the gospel, if you will. I don't know if it's really a side, but my hope is that by what I'm doing is to try to get some folks to start talking about issues in the church. And if it is the case that in talking about those issues with other Christians in the right kind of way, there's a different strategy or a different solution or a different forward movement for the church, that we'll hear that. You know, and so that, I don't know if that makes any sense.
Sure.
You know, I hear some people say this isn't the best way for the church to respond to hunger in my community. Well, what is the best way then? And I think by listening to people deeply, we might be able to pull some of those out that we haven't thought of before or heard before.
So inviting them to reflect and then even hear their own words based on the experience within a given context.
Within the context, and absolutely within the context. You know, the sense of the conference is listening to you where you are. Mm-hmm. If Des Moines got it wrong,
right.
Des Moines saying, tell us how to get it right.
Right.
Because I don't believe it. I don't believe that our conference is actually driven. I don't believe that we as the annual conference or even the church, I don't believe our justice issues are actually driven nearly so much by special interests as other people might suggest. But I think if we have a sense that we haven't been heard or voices aren't being expressed, that creates that idea. So my hope is that the work I can do is help people be heard.
Now, Iowa is a fairly diverse area in some respects.
Mm-hmm.
There are a number of emerging racial ethnic communities,
mm-hmm.
and immigrant communities.
Yes, yes.
There's certainly a diversity of philosophical perspectives about social issues.
Absolutely.
Is there a way to create some connections between the whole variety of opinions all across the spectrum?
Mm. In talking with other people and thinking through this, I'm not any kind of expert.
Mm.
I believe the dialogue is the point.
Mm.
I don't believe that we as a church can afford to come to a fixed position on anything, because I think time moves forward, cultures shift, and things change, and what seemed like what was a perfect solution for a problem of a particular time won't be tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So there needs to always be some flexibility in that, so we can't hold on to, my church's position has always been that public education is the best way forward, so I'm not going to shift on that.
Mm-hmm.
If in a new reality there's some other thing that comes up that might be better. Because we have to get back to the core of why do we believe in public education. And one of the reasons we believe in public education is we believe when it's left to people to make that choice, they will leave certain people out of the education process.
Mm, yeah, understand.
So the core issue there is, as a member of United Methodist Church, do you believe all people should have equal access to equal levels of education? You know,
mm-hmm.
Well, how do we do that? And to this point, the church has believed it's been, you know, in public education. I believe that dialogue is the place. So let's start talking about, okay, that's fine. Can we agree that all these diverse populations, people who come, whose families speak Spanish at home, do they have a right to public, do they have a right to education, to read, to write, and to flourish?
Mm-hmm.
Or should they be kept behind because their families speak a different language at home?
Mm.
Because I think as church people, we'll come to one conclusion on that.
Yes, based on?
On full inclusion, on the sacred worth of other human beings, and
A political perspective.
To a political perspective. And let's say, okay, so you're voting Republican, you're voting Democrat, you're voting Green, you're voting Libertarian, but
uh-huh.
Let's all of us agree that this child whose family speaks Spanish has a right to the best education possible as an American citizen,
uh-huh.
As an American citizen, then we can get to a solution that maybe makes more sense across those diverse opinions.
Or a person who is in an immigrant status, but
absolutely.
Not yet achieved.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, well, and...
Yeah.
So you know, as I'm walking through with this, that's where I kind of feel like it needs to be a careful approach, and getting us pointed at the right issue,
right?
And not necessarily at the talking about the solutions that other people have already put out there. Mm-hmm. If we want to get really vital dialogue, because then God, you know, God gets in the mix there, and God says, "Wait, you hadn't thought about this one." Okay. Because, you know, because it's the multiple perspectives together that move us forward, not just the single focus.
Okay.
That's the way I think. So.
Sure. Now, your title is a joined title, mm-hmm, of two perspectives,
yeah,
or aspects. The, uh-huh, Leadership Development Minister for Social Justice,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and mission.
Yes, yes.
Are they knit together?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. In fact, it's been really neat because I've been getting, I got a retired minister emailed me an old devotion that he had, and about, we live in incarnational religion, mm-hmm, and God is present here now in this world, and there is no separation of the cosmic from the mm-hmm, physical, they're actually one and the same. And that means that the mission work that we do, feeding, clothing, housing people, that is really great. And especially if it impacts our individual souls, that's a great thing to do. But if it isn't making the change in the world, mm-hmm, if it isn't actually widening out there, then it's falling very, very short of that really big divine picture that we have. In the same way, if I'm just out there because my fist is clenched, and I want everybody to have equal rights, but I'm not thinking about the equal rights based on their sacred worth or their equal rights. Maybe everybody has equal rights to go make as much money as they want to make. Might be, yeah, a really good example.
Yeah.
So, advocating for social justice for everybody to make $157,000 a year. That would be an equal justice for everybody in money, but it doesn't in any way address the sacred worth of the person or greed or the life of the community together. And I think, mm-hmm, that mission helps to pull us back into that life of the community together, the need of one another. So I think the two work together really well.
Do you see some hands-on mission kind of experiences in the future as you work as a leadership development minister?
You mean for myself to do?
Or for the conference to
do.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. I'm kind of on the fence about mission. in active mission projects. This church I just talked to this last week, for them, doing mission projects together did a couple of things. One, it really bonded them as a group of people. And then two, it helped them to act strongly out in a community that they maybe felt powerless in. The part that I liked about it, though, was that they really connected it to the justice side. Mm-hmm. They recognized that there were hungry people, but beyond that there were hungry people, there was a reason why there were hungry people. And then, so they were really aware of what was driving that. So when a mission project can really connect you to why it is the case that a woman in Appalachia only makes $500 a month and, mm-hmm, lives in a home that doesn't have siding on it, and that there's some response in you about the fact that that isn't right, mm-hmm, then I think a mission like that would be, if we can find a way to bring home, like if as a group or a church we do those mission practices, but we can bring it home to a way of working towards fixing the systems that lead to, you know, like poverty in particular, I think that's really a good forward thing. I find sometimes, though, with mission trips that it's really a sense of, people find kind of a sense of personal conviction, but not a lot of sense of community action. They'll go out and realize how lucky they are with things that they have, and then in a sense of perhaps pity for the folks with whom they worked.
Hmm.
I would like to see whatever kind of mission work that we do go even deeper than that, to that sense of shared humanity. Are you aware of the Ministry With videos? That the UMW ministry with.
Right.
That's the kind of mission work I like.
Right. Right.
I'm not going to give bread to these people. I'm going to go make bread with people.
Right.
And also, actually, I think that would be another idea that I have. One of the things I've really been thinking about as a United Methodist Christian, thinking about John Wesley and going to the workhouses and the mills and, you know,
sure,
breaking down those barriers about between good people and bad people and church people and not church people. How did he get those poor people that had nothing? They gave. They gave of their time. They gave of their talents. They gave of their gifts and their witness and their service. They gave money. They cared for the poor. They didn't just care for themselves. They cared for the poor. Mm. I think we take that opportunity away from the poor sometimes in our churches because we have a sense of the poor are these people we do for rather than we are the poor and we do because God asked us to do. So I would like to see some revitalization of not so much just ministry for other people, but ministry with other people so that even folks that maybe might be materially strapped give their gifts. We can recognize their gifts. Those gifts are part of the community and are shared in equal measure. So,
now, shifting focus to wrap a little bit here. You alluded to music before as a personal interest. Share a little bit more about who you are.
Well, I was telling Jahan that I started playing piano when I was 5. I started before kindergarten, so I wasn't reading yet, and because I like to make noise, and I always stuck with piano, and I got involved with singing and choir when I was in grade school and up through junior high and high school, and I was going to college. I wanted to study music, and I couldn't memorize piano music, so I chose voice as my main instrument, and so I went to Colorado State University, and I've got a degree in music from there, and I pursued classical music there, opera singing and that kind of thing a little bit, and learned a lot. But then when I went back, I got back after I graduated, I went back to my hometown and did private voice and piano students. I did that for a while and I got very ill and couldn't afford to do that anymore. I was diagnosed with diabetes and juvenile diabetes in 2000. And so at that point I got on a quest to find health benefits. And so so that was probably going to be teaching in the public school at that point. So I started working on getting the education and the certifications that I needed for that. And about that same time I was working in churches. That was my first experience with churches, was working as a musician in churches. I didn't grow up with a church. And all of that kind of played all this kind of role in a major transformation in my life, and I ended up getting a job at the Fort Collins First United Methodist Church as their music director. And I got that because their previous music director used the F word at the organist during worship the week before Thanksgiving. So you can put that in or not, but so she was put on an emergency leave, and it was like 2 weeks before Christmas, and they couldn't find anybody else, so I got this job. Well, I negotiated with them for health benefits on top of pay, and that all worked out really great. And so through that entire experience, I ended up meeting my husband, who's Sean McRoberts, and I ended up being baptized as a Christian, and I ended up honing a lot of my skills in terms of worship, and so I did choir directing, and band. I had the praise band there, and orchestra, and a lot of private music. So, did some public performance there, and then I married Sean. I met him at the seminary. My professor was teaching at his seminary, so I met him at the seminary, and we moved back here. And Sean was appointed to Ames. And when I was in Ames, I worked for First Christian Church as a music director, part-time, and I really loved it. It's a really great church. They are Disciples of Christ, not United Methodist, but it was a lot of fun. And then when he got his new appointment, I decided I didn't want to work at a different church on Sunday mornings. I wanted instead mostly to be at his church on Sunday mornings. And so I haven't been working. I've been just enjoying my music for myself. And the other thing I decided when we moved to Mason City was that when we were in Ames, it was a big change for me, and I didn't really get to know people very well there, and I didn't really put down any kind of roots. So I decided when we moved to Mason City that I wanted a deeper relationship, and I wanted to get to know our new town, so I started prayer walking Mason City. And I've gotten most of it. I still have a few streets that I've got to cover, but I walked two-mile segments of Mason City and blogged about that. And I prayed for the people there, prayed for the town, prayed for ministry, and I think that's part of what led to where I am right now. Because again, I just, every step that I would take was kind of further away from music and further into to speaking up more, taking some more leadership in even the local church on movement out of the church into the community and addressing the real lived world of people's lives with the things we say the gospel stands for. So great. Yeah. And we have, I should just say from a personal standpoint, we have two turtles and we have an old dog. And we have a piano that was my great grandmother's. That
Does it have a stool that spins up and down?
You know, I still have the stool. It doesn't sit, it wobbles now. So I sit on a bench, but
the claw feet.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 Big old upright grand piano. So I'm the reason that they have that whole thing about moving a piano and an organ in the
There you go. Good.
Things. So
all right. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.